I was in training in Massachusetts, met my wife there. We moved to Maine, and I practiced for 22 years until October 21, when I was told, take the shot or leave, and I just said, I'm gonna leave. I had no intention of retiring. My father, also a radiation oncologist, worked until he was 69. I was only 63 at the time, and so I was determined to beat my father at least something. He was amazing guy, and he was very good at everything he did. But that was one thing I thought I couldn't even do that. So everybody remembers that phrase, follow the science, right? So in following the science, I found it's easier to understand if you follow the money. Yeah. And the value of that is that it helps us to understand really how dangerous the medical profession has become. We physicians have this amazing power over people. All you have to do is tell somebody that you're a doctor, and their brains change. Mm-hmm. And that's wrong. Because physicians are just as flawed as all the rest of us are. One of the reasons that I didn't take the shot was because I called my wife and I said, I'm going to probably take the shot. And she said, well, bring the package insert home first. I want to read it. And so I actually emailed the CEO because he had just sent down, said, mandate required, do this. I said, where's the package insert? And he sent down 10 FAQs, frequently asked questions. That was the package insert that the FDA had put out. So Celeste said, you're not getting the shot. And I said, you're right, I'm not getting the shot. Because you told me I'm not getting the shot. What this did for me, though, it because I have seen what I have seen as a result of that, it has brought me closer to a relationship with God. And it has given me a greater unshakable faith. Yeah. And that is going to be required in the next phase because they're not done.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to get way worse. And we have a responsibility to ourselves for our own health. Nobody out there is going to help us. We are going to do this ourselves. I want to talk a little bit about Fauci himself, the follow the science. I have a couple of personal things. I was, after high school, I really wasn't ready to go into medicine yet. So I wanted to see if I could try research. And so I worked at the Department of Cell Physiology and Immunology at the Rockefeller. The Rock is an evil, satanic place. But I didn't know that in 1980. In 1983, Fauci got the call. He was the chief of virology at the Rock. So I'm heading up the elevator back to the lab with a bunch of other people in the department, including the chair, Dr. Zan Cohen. And somebody in the back of the elevator said, what do you think about Fauci getting called to the NIH? And Zan said, just two words, good riddance. Now, I had known this guy for 3 years. He was a wonderful, mild-mannered, very supportive person of everybody in the department. And, you know, it's one of those things in life, you just remember these things. I don't know why, but now I know why. But Zan, it was so out of character for him. So he knew what a fraud Fauci was, because they worked together in the same institution. But I was touched again about 5 or 6 years ago. We took on a new saddle fitter. We ride horses. And she was a cell biologist. And she had a company. She had a couple of patents. But she got sick of the constant need to get money from the outside to run her company. So she just finally left and went to England, became a saddle fitter. Now she is actually a world-renowned saddle fitter because she has a great talent. You know, it's not, her brain absorbs things and she can take information he has from the outside and change it. And that's why she's such an amazing scientist. But she said that Fauci was ran the peer review program for a variety of journals. And she and her husband had a new groundbreaking whatever, and they submitted it. And Fauci read the preprint, and he saw that his own lab, which was on the same trajectory, but they were about 6 months behind. And so he had the peer reviewers stall the paper for about 8 months, during which time the lab finished and published. So they became the oft-quoted first article, and theirs was therefore the never-quoted second article, the confirmatory article. I don't really want to talk about remdesivir right now, but I do want to talk about how research is propaganda. And that would be news to me back in medical school. I naturally assumed that everything I was told was based on research, and therefore it is fact. There were two big studies. One was the British Medical Journal, and the fellows, I kind of forget. BMJ went back, and these fellows went back, and they went back to the raw data and show that 50% of, just in one, this one journal, 50% of the articles were fraud. And another journal was 90% with fraud. So, and this has been going on forever. So one of the things about this is that I am sure that almost everything I was taught in medical school was a lie. And Sherry Tenpenny, Dr. Tenpenny, said, orthopedic surgeon, said, I had to unlearn everything I learned in medicine in order to be able to learn what is true about health. And I am dealing with that because you are trained. And this is the problem. Research can define and set guidelines. This is the problem with research. Is that when I was told something in my radiation oncology residency, it was backed by this paper, confirmed by this paper, therefore it was truth. And unquestioning. Now, pharma understands that if they can set the guidelines, if they can manipulate the guidelines, they can steer the research toward patentable drugs. And that is the big problem with the research today, is it no longer is pure research. The pure researchers have all gone. Or they are no longer, they are subjecting themselves to this burden, because the trouble is that government will only fund those research programs that they know will bring us back to where we come from, which is that they create doctrine, they create patentable drugs, they create research, they create doctrine, patentable drugs, research, and it keeps cycling. And it is a gigantic amount of money. So the only way you'll have access to the government contracts, and now he's retired, but Fauci ran the vast majority of that in NIAID, as if he played their game. Medical education is, of course, indoctrination. Doctors are trained to follow guidelines. We're not... go ahead.
Can you expand on the medical... wait, what was it? Is education or something? What do you say?
Well, medical education... I'm not about to go so far as to say all education is indoctrination. I think that's probably true as well. But medical education truly is, and the reason is that we are inculcated or indoctrinated to, and are trained to simply say, this problem requires this solution. And that is what is a guideline. Without going too far afield, the problem with physician training is that when you only follow guidelines, you don't think at all. So if we go back 150 years ago, and that was when the AMA was formed, the doctors would come to your house, your farm, your boat.
Yeah.
And so Johnny is sick. He would look at what Johnny had, and he would go outside to your backyard and find something in the backyard that solved the problem. Because he knew that this sickness had this, was an imbalance that required something to be able to restore the balance. The body will then take over. All you have to do is just kick in the right direction, and the body will be able to take over, because the body knows what to do. God doesn't make mistakes, ever. And the body knows what to do, but if you take it too far out of balance, then you need something to bring it back. And so doctors were herbalists, doctors were chiropractors, doctors were, and this, when the AMA was formed, they wanted to do away with that. Because this was now decentralized medicine. Everybody was doing their own thing because my backyard had these weeds, your backyard in Carolina had those weeds, that backyard in California has those weeds. So doctors would do what they could based on the things that they had at their own disposal. I think that 15% of modern medicine is okay because it's trauma medicine represents about 15% of medicine. And we're very good at that. We can bring back people that are severely injured and bring them back, right? But 85% of it is not. 85% of it is petroleum-based drugs and other kind of wacky promulgations from on high that have just taken on a life of their own because that's what we were taught. It's a little worse now because doctors don't question guidelines. And COVID brought another very serious problem, which is if you question guidelines, we're going to take your license. But it wasn't just state medical boards. It was actually your board certification was getting yanked. This is amazing. I mean, this is truly amazing. Board certification is something that I got in 1991. You know, I was certified. And how can you say that something that I'm doing in 2021 should allow you to take something that I've had for now 30 years? It's just, it was amazing. And they were doing it to, you know, some really prominent, famous physicians. The medical industry, so medical education is propaganda. Medical industry is disincentivized towards health. Why? Because a healthy person doesn't need them. They also don't want you to die either. Because there's no money to be made there. So they want us to be a little sick so we don't really know that we're sick. We just are just a little... I don't feel, this must be the way it is. I must be getting older.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever.
That's what they say.
You know? But the loss of revenue, again, follow the money, the AMA actively suppresses anything that threatens the medical industry.
Correct.
So American Medical Association was formed, as I said, in 1947. And for about 50 years, they just spun their wheels because doctors were like, I don't really need to be a part of an association. I don't live in a city. I don't really need this because we're out in decentralized medicine. 1897, they incorporated. And in 1900, is that right? Yeah, the AMA Council on Medical Education. They wanted to regulate medical education, but they didn't have the money. Now, I mentioned that I wanted to go back to the beginning of time, so beginning of time for America. 1787, Continental Congress, right? Benjamin Rush, great physician. They're hammering out the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. Rush gets up and made a strong plea for freedom of health. And the reason he said that was, and I want to quote here, he thought that we must incorporate health freedom into the Constitution like religious freedom, or there will come a time when government will organize medicine into a dictatorship.
Wow.
How prescient.
Well, I guess we're there.
That's amazing.
But we know we're there now, but we were there 100 years ago. It's not now. Because, so, remember I said 1847 AMA was founded. They resented any competitors who drove down costs and drew customers away. That was who? Everybody out there practicing. Because they did it cheaply. So I talked about the Council of Medical Education. They wanted to regulate education, but they didn't have the money. 1910, J.D. Rockefeller commissions the infamous Flexner Report. Now, I will tell you, in medical school, Flexner Report was discussed. This was the wonderful, great leap forward in medicine. And this report was fabulous. Now, did I go out and read the report? No. Did I go out and even research it? I was told this, and so it went into my brain. Flexner, good.
Yeah.
So, the Flexner Report was commissioned by Rockefeller. Rockefeller had his scientists say, you know, we can synthesize. John D. So John D. Rockefeller is Eastern Seaboard Standard Oil, SO, right? So he was an oil magnate.
At the time, he was probably the richest man in America.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah. And he has very heavy ties to Maine.
Yeah, unfortunately. So Rockefeller commissions this report called the Flexner Report. Abe and Simon Flexner. And a guy named Fred Gates, no relation. He was actually a Baptist minister. But those three went out to all the institutions, chiropractic, herbalists, standard medical institutions, osteopathy, and came back saying, they're all bad. That was their message. Everybody is bad. And so Flexner took that report, Rockefeller went to that report, went to Congress, said, medicine is a state of serious turmoil. People are being injured and hurt. And no data, no facts. Congress said, well, we don't have the money to deal with this. Rock said, never fear. So this is brilliant. He went to all these institutions that he had just audited, offer them up $1 million, which is a big chunk of cash back in 1910. $1 million to $1 million to help them to understand two basic features that he wanted to bring in. Centralize medical education. Come in. So centralized medical education and the establishment of state medical boards to ensure, quote, the proper training, unquote, of physicians. So these $1 million, I'll let you guys get set up, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, I'm glad you're here. Welcome. So the institutions that took the $1 million were, oh, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
We'll be able to build things and attract physicians. And those that didn't, were gone within 10 years. By 1950, there were only two naturopathic colleges left. I think there's one still now. I'm not really sure. They're gonna have a resurgence. But by 10 years, all of them were gone. And so The Rock took over all of medical education and centralized it. And of course, these are the diseases. These are the solutions. So remember, back about 50 years before that, there was Pasteur, he was disease theory, and there was Bouchon, he was terrain theory. So terrain theory says our cells are exposed to bad, and they go sideways, and all we have to do is reset, and they will go back to good. But Rockefeller knew that if he poisoned us slowly, that he will be able to keep us a little bit sick because the cells will never be able to recover.
Yeah.
And so we won't be able to get better and get healthy. We will rather be chronically ill. So this emphasis on centralized medical education and state medical boards will come back to haunt us, because state medical boards then came under the auspices of the Federation of State Medical Boards, which is a government-sponsored program. And all state medical boards, very few of them think for themselves, are given doctrine to this is what you will do. This is one of the reasons why our Christiane Northrup and our Paul Gosselin had their careers yanked, because they didn't follow the rules. And it is hopeful that one of the things that will come out of our great leap forward in the next 10 to 20 years is that state medical boards will be stripped of their power, and they will go back to doing what they were originally designed to do, which is to issue licenses and to make sure people aren't really screwing up. That's the definition of really screwing up is really hard to say now. But the point, though, is by 1920, almost all the holistic health programs were gone. Oh yeah, I forgot, 1913. So in 1913, the AMA started their propaganda department, because they weren't getting the kind of traction that they wanted. And so that department was formed. So any doctor that wasn't using a patentable drug, instead using naturopathics, was suppressed. And they started this really interesting AMA approval process. So if you are an AMA approved drug, we would happily take it, because it's been approved by an institution that is beyond repute. It's all of the medical doctors, after all, in the country. And you remember the 1950s Camel cigarettes, right? That meme comes up on every once in a while. But 4 out of 5 doctors said Camel cigarettes were great for the T zone. Taste and throat. Taste, meaning it helped you, it would tasted great, and throat, it cleared your throat, it soothed your throat. So the T-zone, it's fabulous. This is, in fact, all of the cancers that I saw in smokers were in the T-zone. That's just an aside. But not to worry. Because even though naturopathy was being suppressed, still there were people that were doing this. So the 1920s, Max Gerson, right? So Max Gerson, organic food, juicing, and either castor oil or coffee enemas. That's all he was doing. And he was curing all kinds of ailments, including people who had cancers. A very pivotal a point happened in 1946, the Pepper-Neely Bill. So Claude Pepper, people have heard that name. Neely, I don't remember him as well. Anyway, Pepper-Neely had testimony in the summer, July of 1946. So the U.S. Senate took testimony on from various cancer researchers, including Gerson. And Gerson's testimony is so compelling that Claude Pepper left the chamber at the end of it and went right out to have a news conference to extol the virtues of Gerson's therapy. In swoops, the PMA, the Pharmaceutical Manufacturers Association, lobbyists, AMA, lobbyists, the American Cancer Society already existed too in 1913, lobbyists, who all said in unison, ignore the press conference, come to this cocktail party instead. One lone guy from ABC decided he was actually going to report on it. Now, I've been trying to find this guy's name because this is out there, but the name has been scrubbed from the internet, at least where I can find it. This one lone ABC anchor decides he's going to report on it. Now, he's got 30 years of experience. So he gets on that night, and this is radio, and he talks about what he just heard. PMA, Pharmaceutical Manufacturers Association, calls up ABC News the next day and says, we're pulling all of your advertising revenue unless you fire him. Uh-huh. And 2 weeks later, he was gone. So it was going to cost them tens of millions. And you would think, if they were really the Fourth Estate, that they would have said, screw you. We'll find another source of revenue. We don't need your money. Mm-hmm. They didn't. And so you see, of course, now the Pfizer, brought to you by Pfizer, brought to you by Pfizer. This was going on way, way back in the past. Anyway, the guy was, in fact, fired, and the bill died in committee. Another pivotal time, the so-called Fitzgerald Report. Charles Toby was a senator at the time. This is 1950s. Toby's son, Charles Jr., got cancer. Was told by the medical establishment he had 2 years to live. How they know these things, I don't know. But he sought alternative treatment. Again, I couldn't find out what exactly it was. It doesn't matter. The point is that he was cured. Not hard to do. Because cancers, like hypoxic acid environments, and our body thrives in oxic, alkaline environments. Mm. So all you have to do is make that shift, and the cancer cells cannot survive. They are constitutively incapable of surviving in an alkaline, oxic environment. Mm. Anyway, Toby's son told his father, I think that there's a problem here because it took me forever to find this clinic guy, whatever, and he cured me. And so Toby goes and talks to Benedict Fitzgerald, an investigator with the Interstate Commerce Commission, asked him to look at this suppression. So Fitzgerald presented evidence that standardized medicine was suppressing alternative treatments for cancer. You'd think that'd be a bombshell, 1953 bombshell. No, it's in the congressional record, but the media by that time had already been bought, got no media coverage whatsoever, and that's where, so it resides in the congressional record, but that's it. It was suppressed. 1986, what happened then? National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. You'd think that'd be a good thing, right? Guillain-Barré, lots of things were happening. The drug company was getting sued. And so that this act was to hold them accountable and help the kids? Nah. Give them right. Yep. Eliminated vaccine manufacturer liability from vaccine injury claims. The word was, what Reagan was told was vaccines are unavoidably unsafe, but are necessary. Now, you've seen, I'm sure, the charts. You get a spike in something, and by the time the vaccine is developed, it's gone. Spike in something, by the time the vaccine is developed, it's gone. Mm-hmm. So vaccines have nothing to do with herd immunity. This is herd immunity. And the vaccine did nothing but hurt people. But then 2004, the Project BioShield Act. You probably heard of this one. So introduced the concept of emergency use authorization. So that was 2004. And this was because the vaccine manufacturers said, you know, we still have liability. So this Project BioShield allowed unapproved drugs to be brought to market for any reason during a public health emergency as defined by the Health and Human Services, right? So FDA, CDC, Medicare, Medicaid, they're all under HHS. So if Health and Human Services decide that this is a problem, then they can invoke emergency use, and then you can bring anything to market that you want. Doesn't even have to be a vaccine. It could be anything to market that you want. 2005, the PREP Act. Public readiness and emergency preparedness. Sounds really good. Get a generator, get a source of water, grow your own food, grass-fed meat, you know. Now, this expanded the liability protection from manufacturing, which was already, to testing, distribution, administration, and use of, wait for it, medical countermeasures against chemical, bio, radiologic, nuclear agents, pandemics, and other events as deemed to be public health emergencies. So that's everything. So it expands liability, everybody, from the person who gave you the shot all the way back to the person who synthesized the shot, have this blanket liability. This is 2005. Wow. And then, I don't want to talk about a lot. There's a lot of other ones, but the one that really got me was 2013, the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act. So those of you who are alive in 1946, maybe not any of us, but in 1946, Smith-Mundt was authorized the CIA to lie to anybody in the world. Propaganda. So it authorized CIA to give propaganda to anybody, but specifically excluded the United States of America. Smith-Mundt modernization under Obama removed that last thing. So now the government can lie to us, and that act protects them. It's a scary thing. But for me, I have always had three things that keep me going. I trust God. Yeah. I keep my own house clean, which means I try to be as healthy as I possibly can. And I help others. And by helping others, I actually make myself healthier even. So trust God, clean house, help others. Health is a personal responsibility. Health care, it's a word that I don't use because it's an oxymoron. It doesn't make any sense to me. Nobody should be caring for your personal health. We have responsibility to care for ourselves. Fasting. Anybody fast? Right? So even daily fasting is good enough. So the cell, remember, our body, when we feel bad, it's because our cells feel bad. If our mitochondria go into dysfunction, that means we no longer have an oxic alkaline environment. We have a hypoxic acid environment. So mitochondrial dysfunction is a big problem. Things that can cause mitochondrial dysfunction include toxins, EMF. There's lots and lots and lots of things that we're exposed to, but by and large, we can heal ourselves, and one of the big ways is through fasting. So a cell, when it is, when it no longer is having food presented to it, goes into a housekeeping mode. And it finds all the trash that's in this in the cell. And it pinches it off in these little exosomes and sends out in the cytoplasm where the macrophages eat it up. So that is how a cell protects itself. So our time of not eating allows enough time to go by so that the nutrients in our system will start to drop. And this natural process will happen. Also, autophagy, or programmed cell death, is also brought on by fasting, because the cell realizes, okay, I can't fix myself anymore, and it turns on the gene for cell death. So that the body has an easy way to fix itself. So what is fasting? It's 12 to 14 hours. 16 is ideal, but I can't do. Sunlight. Jack Cruz. Who's heard of Jack Cruz? Jack Cruz, great neurosurgeon. So Jack Cruz is a pioneer in neurosurgery. And he wanted to bring his postoperative patients out. It's all right, baby. I forgive you. Love of my life. So Jack Cruz wanted to take his post-op patients immediately outside, into the sunlight. And the big hospital he was working for said, no, I'm not going to do that. So he found a little hospital that had a beautiful courtyard, and he did. He brought his patients out there. Now, this is observational only, but what everybody observed in that hospital was his neurosurgical patients were recovering faster from the anesthesia, recovering faster from the injury, and were getting out of the hospital quicker than the patients who were fluorescent LED light bound. So it was only sunlight, probably the ultraviolet and the infrared parts of the sun spectrum. Doesn't matter to me, don't care. But Cruz is a wonderful man, and I would encourage you to read one of his books. It's called EpiPaleoRx. I haven't read it yet either, but my farrier was here today, and he's really excited about it. And his chiropractor is really excited about it. Anyway, there's a separate issue. So sunlight, quiet, prayer, introspection, reflection. Simply being quiet. Mm-hmm. It's truly amazing what quiet does. Forgiveness. The Holy Spirit will come and grant us peace when we are quiet. Mm-hmm. When we are, and I was this way all of my childhood, I couldn't get out of my own way. I had way, way too much energy. I didn't know the definition. I didn't know what quiet was. You know, it was go, 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 fall asleep. Go, 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 fall asleep. There wasn't anything in between. Consume local organics. That's easy. Pure water. There's a saying, drink water from the springs where the horses drink. Why? Because horses will never drink bad water.
Yeah.
They have we think dogs have a good sense of smell. Horses have an unbelievable sense of smell. And they can, you know, we put out some hay, they don't eat it. Yeah. Looks fine to us, but there's something wrong with that hay. They can smell it. They smell it and they walk away. And so, you know, anyway, pure water. Good sleep habits. There's a saying, go to sleep and wake up with the birds. Sing praise to your food and water. This is relatively new to me. I saw it about a year ago. I was looking at a podcast and a guy was making a nice tea infusion. And the last thing he said was, now, you guys can all think I'm crazy. And he said, thank you. I love you. And then he drank it. Mm-hmm. Water has memory. Mm-hmm. When water is cursed, it is bad. When water is subjected to Bach, Beethoven, loon calls, it is good. Mobilize the organs. So I used to have rest, exercise, hydration, nutrition. That was my big four when I was talking to the patients. And exercise was always the thing that was elusive to me because I didn't want people to exercise in a way that it wasn't natural to them. I want them to do what comes naturally to them because everything that you do naturally stimulates flow. Lymphatic flow is key to helping bring toxins out of the body. So all of them drain the thoracic duct and then they are, you know, it gets out of the system. So organs need to move. The lymphatics need to move. So if we unfortunately have to have a relatively sedentary time, when we do get up, we want to really move around, shake that booty. And the final one is N equals one research. So most of the time we think of random, I want to tell the DMS story. So DMSO, anybody use it? Excellent. So DMSO was huge in the 1940s through 60s. It was gigantic. The FDA was asked to regulate it. By whom? Pharmaceutical companies. And the FDA was looking, and this one drug had about 10,000 benefits. And they'd have to go through each one individually. And they said, we're not going to do that. So they said, are there any randomized controlled trials? And those who use DMSO, you know what it smells like? Rotten eggs. So it's impossible because the subject will know if they're getting DMSO. So, since randomized controlled trials were the gold standard at the time, that was the first thing that the FDA said. There's no randomized controlled trials, therefore there's no data. Observational studies began. But the second thing they did was they went on a crusade to lambast and say it was dangerous. And within 10 years, it was gone. Almost gone. Veterinarians don't stop using it. My farrier told me today, he has seen swelling in a horse's limb go away within minutes of the application of DMSO. One can ingest it, one can put it on, but it's a pretty amazing, amazing drug. Anyway, N equals one research means I should try things on myself to see if it helps me. If it helps me, that's fine. It might not help you. I don't really need to know if it helped you. This is the difference between this and the centralized pharmaceutical industry. The drug is supposed to help everybody. Of course, it doesn't help anybody and it hurts a lot. But this, if you try it and it makes you feel better, good, do it. If it doesn't, do something else. But always use your body as the experimental vessel because it's going to tell you what you need to know. Certain things are important, like being outside, getting cold. It activates a parasympathetic nervous system. But N equals one research, I think, is more important than any other thing that we can do. And I end with, nature is talking to me. And the question is, am I listening? So I did want to open it up because the purpose of the end of this time, 45 minutes, perfect, was to help us to help each other, to tell us, to tell if there are things that we do regularly that have helped us. And one of the things I think that really has helped me is vitamin D. Now, there's great controversy right now about how much K2 you need to best ingest vitamin D. I don't think that's really important. Don't take too much K. But D is really important because we cannot get enough sunlight on our skin to get enough vitamin D because we don't live in Florida. If we did, we're fine. We don't need any supplementation. But the further you get north, or way north, and the amounts, it's hard to say, but there are D3 levels. So the next time you happen to get railroaded into a meeting with your physician, ask for a D3 level. And if it's low, supplement. If it's not low, whatever you're doing is okay.
You know what the range is, but they say the range isn't always really the range we should be at.
It should be at least 70. It's 70 nanograms per deciliter, I think it is. But the number is 70. Minimum of 70. Last time I checked, I was at 100. Celeste was at 130.
Wow.
That's okay. I don't advocate going that high, but it seems that 70 is necessary. And many of us are down at 10. And that's where people died. Everybody who died COVID had a low D3 level.
Yeah.
Quercetin. Yeah. I'm trying to find a plant-based source for quercetin because I'm trying to get away from having to take uphill.
Where's quercetin?
So it's zinc, you know, zinc. Zinc is an element. And zinc helps cells kill viruses, bacteria, phages, parasites. So we need adequate zinc levels, but we need a way of getting the zinc into the cell.
Yeah.
And quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, is a zinc ionophore, as is ivermectin, as is hydroxychloroquine, and there's a whole boatload of them. But I'm trying to find a source of quercetin that doesn't force me to take tons of food. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the MSU meetings, they really promote using your own grapefruit skins and your orange skins.
Yes, to make your own ACQ,
and
right.
And then you can make it dense, and then
good.
You can just take your little
I like
shot.
That. I like that. That's a good one. All right, I got to go back and look at that. Because we were making that for a while.
Yeah.
So, sources of vitamin A. Carrots, right? Sweet potatoes. So the things that we can grow. Sources of B2. Spinach. Mushrooms. B9. Asparagus. Broccoli. Lentils. B6. Salmon. Chicken. Brown rice, eggs, B12, beef.
Oh, you said B6. It sounds like it all comes from protein, unless rice isn't a protein, right?
I'm not so sure about why rice is high in B6. I just pulled this off the internet. I was interested because I'm just trying to figure out what I can just eat that has me avoid taking my multivitamin B every day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a question. What happens if you're low in vitamin
B6? So I'd have to look it up. That's pyridoxine deficiencies. So there's some that are quite obvious. So vitamin C, you get these big cracks on the sides of your mouth. It's called scurvy. Right?
B6 is from nerve conduction.
Yes. Correct. Let's see. Vitamin C. Well, oranges, yeah, but strawberries, something we can grow here. Calcium. Broccoli. It keeps coming up. Kale. Obviously cheese, but are you making cheese yet? Somebody is. Iron.
Beef.
Chickpeas, too. Interesting. Potassium. Beets.
Bananas.
Yeah, but we can't really get bananas up here. You know, I'm trying to, you know, I we can't grow them. I really like bananas. I like bananas a lot, right? But beets are a source that if I had to grow it myself. Zinc, pumpkin seeds, it's the big one. Oysters, magnesium, pumpkin seeds. Vitamin D. That's what I didn't know. Freshwater trout and salmon. Kefir. Mushrooms. Certain mushrooms. You have to look them up. Look them up.
Some.
Yes. Correct.
Fireball in Wisconsin.
Why didn't I say that?
What did you say?
Sun. I'm talking about mushrooms. It's just the sun. Mushrooms are growing in the dark. Are high in vitamin D.
Yeah.
Go figure. Vitamin E.
I've heard that with mushrooms, if you put them in the sun, that it greatly increases. I'm not even sure what, but there was these. Oh, there's went crazy on this group that I was following. Everybody was showing how they were putting their mushrooms in the sun and then eating them. It like activates a whole bunch of stuff.
Wow.
I don't know if it's true or not, but I know that all these people swore by it. It was on.
That is cool. Isn't it?
I read that the reason that northern tribes like the Inuit don't get scurvy is that fresh killed meat, raw, has a lot of vitamin C. Mm-hmm. And
wow,
it's all destroyed if you cook it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I bet you read that.
This is National Microwave Day. Did anybody know that?
Oh, no.
No, none of you knew that.
Why did they
have to
do that?
I didn't use mine today.
Anyway,
I heard, I mean, on the internet, why is it, maybe you could tell me, why is it that apricot seeds or kernels are like touted?
B17. So, another, the laetril story. So, laetril, the Mexicans were having great success curing cancer with laetril when I was in medical school. And I remember the lecture. Very prominent guy came out, stood in the podium and said, laetril is deadly. Laetril is bad. We must never use laetril. Absolutely no science. So I didn't know about the Mexicans have been using laetril for decades now, until very recently, but that's the reason. But it's also, B17 is present in apple pits, most pits actually, strawberry and raspberry. So if you consume strawberries and raspberries, you can get them. The question I don't know is, do you have to chew? Do you have to really grind?
You do have to.
Okay. So you have to grind up your strawberries and raspberries in order to get the effect. Mm. Okay.
You can chew them, but you have to chew them really well.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, because it's in the seeds.
Yeah. B17 is good. Yeah, all right. Good for the teeth, though.
Yeah, because that's what, you know, just as it came up one day, something I was reading, and then I looked it up, and it was like, either people were saying this is a miracle thing, or it's the worst thing in the planet.
Well, this is what I'm saying. The worst thing in the planet has been since 1985 or so, at least.
But it's not really.
No. It is people truly. There are certain things. I mean, this is probably one of those things that the imbalance toward hypoxic acidic somehow B17 restores that, and now your body can deal with whatever it is that it's having to deal with. So it may not be that it has a direct anti-cancer effect. It probably is restoring the natural balance of the light of the host, and the host then rejects the cancer.
But I was told apple seeds have arsenic.
Yes, they do.
You don't really want to chew
yes, they do.
Hurt your yourself. Mm-hmm.
Yep. This is one of the reasons why we stopped feeding apples to our horses. Because we did, didn't they have arsenic? Yeah. We did a horsehair analysis, sent it off and came back. Very high arsenic. So I was like, okay. Yeah, but arsenic and old lace, I mean, if you get very small amounts all the time, you don't die.
Right, but if you eat too much, you die.
Yeah, all once, yeah. Good question, good point.
Yes. So, my ex-husband was a chiropractor who treated people naturally with vitamin supplements, and so many people came in with so many conditions, and they were healed.
Right.
Now, you were talking about vitamin D and zinc, and because we're a life pool, I don't think that we should be putting chemical vitamins into our body.
Oh, yeah. Could you talk about that?
So, like we used to use, and I still do, standard process vitamins because they're made from food.
Right.
So I just wanted to know, do you believe in using chemical vitamins or not?
No.
Okay.
We heard about standard process this week for the first time.
It.
From our vet.
Yep.
Veterinarians are decades ahead.
And they have a vet line now. Standard process has a vet line.
Yes. That's how we
heard about it. And I've been using it since 1985. So
what's the source?
Standard process.
But what are they using?
Plants.
And they have their own farms, their own organic farms. And they make it from their vegetables. And
wow.
Yeah, and we used to call it miracles that happened in the office because unbelievable what he could take care of with standard process vitamins.
Mm, boy, yeah.
And where is he located?
No, he doesn't practice.
I had a friend in my old profession whose father was an old, famous, extremely successful veterinarian, and he told us once, the veterinarians didn't really change. They stayed on the train, and the train just kept going. It's the MDs who fell off the train that fell behind.
Good point.
And so it isn't that they're so much better. It's that they've always been good, and the doctors became bad.
But part of that, too, I think, is because once insurance really became a thing, then the insurance company would say, if you're out of line, we're not going to pay.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's right.
And well, so the doctor said, oh, okay. And now you've got insurance companies telling you what you can and cannot do.
Well, insurance companies are embedded with the American Medical Association.
Right.
I know that. But I mean, so the doctor, if he knows I need X, but he's not going to get any kickback because he's not pushing Y.
Right. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
No more barbecue grills or trips to Bahamas or with the amount of drugs that you sell.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, in your experience, what do you have a idea on the percentage of colleagues that had any kind of awakening?
Tell her the story of when you were trying to explain about the vaccine during the tumor boards and what the people were saying.
Well, yeah, so before I left, so the mandate came down in like July, and I was already we'd have tumor board Tuesday and Thursday, and all the physicians and all the pathologists, radiologists, nurses. So it was about 25 or 30 people who were attending these. And I would give a fact for the day. Like, did you know that there's no package insert for these vaccines? It hadn't quite happened yet, but one of them would be, did you know they just changed the definition of vaccine?
Yeah, that's right.
Did you know that if you died within 2 weeks of getting the vaccine, you were still unvaccinated?
Right.
You know, so that because there was such a gigantic swell of deaths in that first 2 weeks, they had to change the definition. Now, the FDA has been merciless in doing that for their entire career. So mercury levels got a little too high, in the population that changed the level of mercury that's considered safe?
Mm-hmm.
Cholesterol.
Same thing.
Cholesterol is safe. Mm-hmm. Cholesterol is wonderful. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that I don't want to talk too much, but go ahead.
I got a couple of different comments that I'd like to hear you. And you've already talked about one of them, the guidelines.
Yeah.
I'm old enough that I remember. I could just sense. My mother was a physical therapist, okay, and her patients were referred to her by medical doctors. She was also head of the Maine Physical Therapy Association for 2 or 3 years, worked at Mercy and Maine Med. Mm-hmm. In those years, osteopathic physicians were not allowed to set foot in Maine Medical Center. The people don't realize this anymore. You know, you young guys, I really want the young people to hear this. You know, MD doctors with that degree considered the osteopathy.
Mentally defective.
Yeah. No, they considered osteopathy to be quackery.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they were not allowed to set foot in Maine Medical Center.
Yeah.
And I could sense, you know, when I got sick and my mother brought me to a doctor, that physicians in those days had autonomy. They were not following guidelines. Mm-hmm. They were considered independent professionals, right, as you've already talked
right
about. And so, you know, I know they were still stuck in the system, but they had a lot more discretion.
Yes,
and
true.
And now they're just filling out checklists and stuff. You know,
off-label use, compassionate use. There's lots of things that have been extinguished.
Okay.
While I can appreciate that, as I said before, anything which was a threat to the industry and chiropractic, herbalist are all threats to the industry, and they were not to be tolerated. So they were to be actively suppressed, and we only came to know this when people get their licenses and their certifications yanked very recently. But this whole suppression process has been going on for 100 years. So when they would say, we're not going to allow DOs to come in to Maine Med, it was simply because that was the going line at the time. And the trouble with that is that physicians didn't question that. They just simply said, okay. So somebody asked the percentage. It was about 10%, because about 10% of physicians, all healthcare workers, left the workforce over the mandate. And it crippled the healthcare system. And they still haven't really recovered.
It's a crisis.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
We're in a crisis.
But that was, had that been 60%, 80%, 90%, none of this would happen.
Yeah.
You know, but physicians don't have backbone anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't think for themselves. Mm-hmm. They did, but even they really didn't, because they were already trained disease, prescription. And patients were, I go to the doctor with a problem, I expect a prescription. My expectation is, if I don't get a prescription, that's malpractice. Because I want to be better. Not, I don't want to regain health. I want to be better.
Sorry, Rhonda. I didn't know you hadn't been answered yet. I didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah.
Did I not answer you?
You did.
Yeah, 10%.
Yeah. Okay. American consumers of medicine have been brainwashed by movies and the media. Here's another thing I want the young people to know. I know a lot of you don't watch television, God bless you. I do, okay? When I was a kid, there was no such thing as an ad on television for a prescription drug.
Right.
Yeah.
That was about 19...
And now, all day long, morning, noon,
yeah,
and night, it's just constant, you know. Ask your doctor about Bellatrix, about whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's endless.
Yeah, something rather.
And also in movies, I don't watch them anymore either, but I did during the lockdowns, right? I got Netflix. I started real... I must
always have, a Coca-Cola can.
Yeah.
And always a pack of Marlboros.
It's worse than that. I I like action movies, okay? I must confess. You will rarely see an action movie that does not have an injection scene in it somewhere.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
They do.
Wow.
If you,
you mean like a vaccine scene?
Could be anything. A needle going into the flesh.
Oh, to make it more palatable to everyone.
Ah, whether it's one of these superhero movies.
Wow. Yep.
You know, it'll turn you into a Superman or la 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 la, you know. And this stuff, it irons that imagery into the public consciousness. And I've got to think that it contributes somehow to the explosion of drug addiction in this country.
Well,
so there's just evil at work everywhere, you know?
Part of it is if you're not taking personal responsibility for your health. Am I going to a doctor saying, I want you to give me a pill to make me feel better? Means I am not going to be responsible for my own health.
Correct.
Because I'm expecting you to fix me. It's the same thing with We the People. We the People abdicated a long time ago, and that's why we're in the mess we're in now. You know, 1913 was also when they decided to centralize banks. I don't think it was any happenstance that it was also in medicine.
World War I, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyway. Go ahead.
We have been going down the prepper rabbit hole for some time now, and one of the items that I hear a lot of people talk about in your bug-out bag or what have you is Benadryl and ibuprofen. I'm curious why they call deem it so important on the list, and what are alternatives?
DMSO. DMSO. I would get a roll-on of DMSO. Because if you turn your ankle and it swells, you just roll that on.
What is it?
Dimethyl sulfoxide?
Is it like something you get out of the earth?
It's a solvent.
Why do they recommend those two?
Well, ibuprofen is a painkiller, and Benadryl is an anti-itch, so you eat something and you break out into a horrendous rash, and you're like, Benadryl. Or you twist your ankle and you can't walk, ibuprofen. That's fine. Right. Know your willow trees. Know where they are. David. Right.
I just want to put in a shameless plug for our annual foraging days, because the wild plants that grow all around us are, the nutritional density is radically higher than anything you can buy in the store or grow in your garden.
Mm-hmm.
And all the supplements that you need, that you're talking about, are growing all around us. Sumac, staghorn and smooth sumac, both of them, for example, are exponentially, radically higher in vitamin C than any orange or lemon or rosa rugosa, wrinkled rose fruit. So everything, some of these plants are really like vitamin supplements that are so dense in nutrients. So, you know, come to our annual, maybe tail end of the winter, we ought to do maybe an indoor lecture on the nutritional density and medicinal value.
Yes, I like that.
That's a good idea, yeah.
It's a really good idea, and then we can go out and see them.
It's fun, it's tasty, it's free, and it's a health food store of supplements growing all around you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's great, David. Thank you,
yeah.
Brian.
My grandmother Kamash on my mother's side was 70% Abenaki Maliseet. When we were ill, she would tell us to wait until our parents didn't know. And then they lived across the street from us. And it was all wooded behind their place. She'd say, you know, when you don't feel good, don't stay in bed. Get out of bed, come over to our place, and they'd take us for walks in the fields and the woods, and she knew what to pick. But she'd tell me, do not stay in bed when you're sick. Get out, get in the sun, walk around with me, pick your stuff up and eat it while we're talking and walking. And then in the evening, I'd be like, I guess I'm going to school tomorrow.
Oops. Precisely, and this is my point. That David and a few other people in this room have that knowledge. Otherwise, it's been lost.
Yeah.
And it is that's why our group is so lucky, because we have access to this. Because that is exactly how to bring a person back to balance. And once you bring them in balance, the body takes over.
Yeah.
Fixes itself.
One of the most common solutions for almost everything was to grab a handful of white pine needles and just chomp on the ends. And just literally stand there walking around chewing on them. When you get about halfway down, throw the rest of the weight, grab another handful. And within 2 hours, you'll be like, wow, I guess I'll be pitching the game tonight.
So, do you still practice medicine? Okay, because so I'm reaching that magic age where the Medicare people are starting to go, you're going to join our ranks really soon. And I don't have a doctor, because I only ever had one because I play hockey, and I thought, I need an allopathic doctor for that.
Right.
But they keep retiring, and then I just, anyway, and then COVID happened, and I can't wear a mask, so nobody, I was killing them if I went to see them.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't, and they're still here, and I'm here. But anyway, so what would be your suggestion for somebody like in my situation where you're reluctantly in the system? So where do you go to get a doctor
right.
who will play along enough but still not kill you?
So I think that you want to consider two things. The first is the federal government, people did not want, remember, Medicare came out in 1965, Great Society, Johnson. My father came home, he was fuming, because he said, this is going to ruin medicine. Mm-hmm. It is for the first time put somebody between me and my patient.
Really?
anyway, so that there was great resistance. So Medicare wrote into their regulations, not in the law, it's in the regulations, two things. One, you automatically get Medicare A at 65. You don't even have to sign up, because they know who you are and they know your birthday. Medicare B, on the other hand, you have to sign up for. Medicare A is anything that happens in the hospital. So as long as your injury, your trauma from hockey, lands you in the hospital, you're automatically covered. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. But if you end up at convenient MD or an emergency room and they just put a cast on and send you out, you'll get the bill. And so Medicare B is the outpatient side. And you sign up, you don't have to do anything else, and they'll cover 80% of whatever. So that is the absolute minimum that you would do. And the reason you sign up for Medicare B, because people weren't.
Yeah, you get a penalty.
Yeah, and the penalty grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. And if you sign up at age 80, it's a gigantic, gigantic penalty.
Why?
Well, because nobody was signing up. This was 65. People People did not want to be forced into an insurance system.
Sure.
But then, so you do that. You sign up for Medicare A and B. Nothing else. C, D, F, G, the drugs. Forget all that. And they go out and find anybody who will take you just as a fee for service. Okay. You know, so it's, and you want to stay completely outside of the system.
And I have been, except for 2013.
That Medicare Part A, Part B costs you absolutely nothing. And so you're just paying for the things that you need. And by and large, people who are pure fee for service, do not take insurance, are going to charge you what it costs plus a margin. Not like hospitals do. What it costs plus a gigantic margin, the insurance company then cuts it back down and they still make a profit. I'm very anti. So I you know, when I left, I thought, gee, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I'm a physician. I'm a healer. I've done this my whole career. And I realized, nah, that was a career. But it's just like any other career, it came to an end, and I'm doing something else now.
Mm. What are you
Sounds like you're riding horses a lot.
She cracks the whip at 4:30. I make the fire. Yep. I make the teas. I bring them upstairs to her. We go out by 6, feed the horses, turn them out. 8:30 or so we eat. 10 o'clock we're out. We work the horses. 1 o'clock we're done with that. And then anything else that we can... The chickens. They take 5 minutes. It's amazing how... Chickens, they look so busy doing absolutely nothing. What is it?
They figured it out.
One of my guys is molting right now. She's like, girl, you're cold. You look cold. And so the hard part is that you got to fit all the other things you want to do in today between 2 and 5. Yeah.
So to keep yourself more alkaline, I know sugar probably is something that moves you more acidic. What other things? If you drink ACV, maybe added, or lemon juice.
ACV?
Apple cider vinegar.
Yeah, apple cider vinegar. Yes. That which goes in sour is sweet for the stomach. And apple cider vinegar, lemon water, even those are acids, they alkalize the body. Mm. It's... Who knows? There was I ran across something from during the Spanish flu pandemic. The doctor was giving people, had a recipe for baking soda. He said, 1/2 teaspoon morning and night for 6 days, 1/2 teaspoon just morning for 6 days, 1/2 teaspoon every other day for 6 days, and then stop. And it may have been alkalizing, but I'm not so sure. One of the things about physicians is the placebo effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? I tell you it's going to work, it works. Mm-hmm. Because I have some kind of power that I don't really understand. But the placebo effect, 37%. And if you could actually increase that even higher than that, up to 60%. For doing nothing. But so I'm not so sure that baking soda would work because there's too much acid in the stomach. It's just rapidly neutralized. But I do think that acid water does work for reasons that are not clear to me. So I think that is very important. I make my own fire water. Oh man, fire cider is so great. I look forward to it every morning. It's like, yeah, so good.
There is a book by Robert Young, Dr.
Yes.
Young.
PH Miracle.
PH Miracle.
Really worth it.
Yeah, it's a good. It's good because it's supposed to keep, you know, like you say, keep your body alkaline. It tells you, you know, how that works in the body.
And essentially,
Dr. Robert Young.
He's a little more radical than most of us would be, really, because he is pure plant based. And, you know, how he's not getting deficiencies, I'm not so sure. But if you eat a pure plant-based diet, you probably can alkalize that way. Horses treat you.
What is fire cider or whatever?
Quick recipe?
I'd have to, I'll give it to Bill. He can broadcast it out. But it's, let's see. 1 orange, 1 lemon, 1 lime. Mm-hmm. 8 cloves of garlic, 4 cinnamon sticks, I think it's 1/2 cup of honey, and then that's in 1/2 gallon mason jar, and fill it with cider vinegar. Doesn't take much cider vinegar. Let it sit for 24 hours. Strain it just to get the big stuff out. Stick in the refrigerator.
Cayenne
pepper, I forgot that. Oh, jeez.
And I use horseradish, too.
Ooh.
You do?
And
yeah, onion. I forgot the onion. Yeah.
Any good use for potassium bicarbonate?
I suppose. What are you thinking?
Just general digestive aid.
Yeah, I mean, if I have an upset stomach and I take a hit of baking soda, which is sodium bicarb, so potassium bicarb, sodium bicarb, it works.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
But you get the potassium instead of the sodium.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh, by the way, does salt cause blood pressure problems?
No.
Actually, unopposed sodium can. Sea salt doesn't. So if you're only taking sodium chloride, it's a problem.
What about the Himalayan salt?
That's what I'm saying. So sea salt, pink salt, they're all the ones that have, you know, 42 oh, to 70 yeah. different kinds
all
of minerals.
Does it look dirty?
Yeah.
Right. And sea salt drives your adrenals. Mm-hmm. And so when they tell you, you know, you've got high blood pressure, you can't eat anything with salt, it's like you're ruining your adrenals.
Yeah.
You need it.
Yeah.
Yep.
You need it to get your get up and go.
Yep. Yep.
And it tastes good.
Yes, it does.
On everything.
Butter and salt. I learned that from David.
Yeah.
I put so much butter and so much salt on everything.
Oh, yeah.
A couple questions. What do you think about chlorine dioxide?
Take it every day.
And diatomaceous earth.
Would take it every day. I've got a giant bag of food grade up in the loft. I just didn't bring it down. But yes, those are two really good things.
Andreas Klocker, he's a, I think it's a Sweden or
he's the DM, he's the chlorine dioxide guy.
Yes, yeah. He is. You can't get his books in the States, but you can get them in Spanish and Italian. Right? So way back when COVID started, or that, whatever they call it, you could see videos of him on YouTube.
Yes.
So it's wonderful. I make it. It's really simple to make.
Yeah.
Why do you take it? Just curiously.
Well, that's what really kept me up. Vitamin D. I did vitamin D, C, and never got sick during COVID.
Okay.
And I got a little woozy after people got a lot of shots and I was touching them and everything, and I would get like a little bit of a sickness.
Yeah.
But then I would take the chlorine dioxide and.
How many drops do you do a day?
Well, you're supposed to go up to like 21.
Yeah.
I do like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And on the hour or two sometimes when I'm not feeling so good.
Yeah.
So you might take 24 or 25 in a day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Then it also is good for parasites.
Sorry, what are you guys?
The chlorine dioxide and the DMSO is sounding so simple in the conversation, but I've had those things for 4 years in my house and I'm terrified to use them. I've got books, I'm reading them, and I still cannot figure out how to take step one. I don't know if it's enough information to do another workshop just on it, but to really break it down for some of us who are, what is it?
Well, part of it is that N equals one. So
yeah.
If you're a statistician, you say that's not statistically significant. But part of it is that we're so ingrained with this is the dose you have to take.
Right.
And you have to let go of that. And say, what does my body need?
So how did I...
How to avoid getting hurt? It sounds all this potential danger with these things.
What I was told was 4 drops, that's it.
Of which, either?
So, no, this is chlorine dioxide.
Chlorine dioxide.
So, and that what that is 4 drops of sodium chloride and 4 drops of any acid. I typically use hydrochloric acid. So 8 drops total. And then you wait a minute and then dilute that up. Now, Klocker takes the gas into solution.
Yeah,
I don't. I don't think that the other things that are go along with it are toxic enough to become a problem. Anyway, so that's where I would start. And do that for like a week. And if you feel nothing, take more.
And what would you be looking for? Feeling better or feeling...
No, I would anticipate feeling actually nothing at that kind of dose.
I see.
But the issue, though, is it depends on the person. This is why N equals 1 is so important. So, for example, let's say I have a huge parasite load and I didn't know it. Hummel proved this was safe for humans because he was in Central America with his workers. They were doing something with a water purification plant, and his workers were so sick they couldn't work. So he said, I got to do something. So he took these tablets, they had tablets of chlorine dioxide, and dropped them into water and drank, and the next day the workers were healthy. So whatever it was that they were, that they had contracted, they got sick, they got better. So if I have a high parasite load and you kill a bunch of them with that very first dose, you will do what's called herxing. And a herx reaction is a good thing.
But you feel bad.
It tells you two things. One, your immune system works. And two, I was sick and I didn't know it.
Yeah.
But I think, and that, you know, when I go to finally doing DMSO other than topically, I'll probably have to start really low and make sure it doesn't hurt me, kind of thing. But I, and then I will build up.
You can only start with one drop.
Right.
And then there's, I have 100% DMSO bottle, and then some of these other recipes were 40% or 50%, and so the, it seems like another calculation that I feel unprepared to make, I guess.
Yeah. Oh,
there's a company called Safrax that makes a chlorine dioxide that I use for my animals. It's
really?
Just yeah, it's just a tablet, and it dissolves. I figured out the ratio for drinking for myself, so I did use the drops before. I've used them for years, and they're.
What do you use them for?
They use them for the animals. The cow, after giving birth, was not doing very well at all. Mm-hmm. She was, had a horrible case of the runs, and I was really concerned for her. So I gave her a bunch of chlorine dioxide, and within a couple of days, she was much better.
So just if they're sick?
No, I give it. I've been.
You give it to them.
I give it to them, especially in the summer. Put in like six tablets in a container. Well, they're feed water.
Yeah.
So they're real happy about it.
We do it with our chickens and our cats.
You do? Just a little drop.
But for myself, I just take one tablet, put it in a liter, and then, anyway, I figured out the dilution to make it. It's pretty easy.
Okay.
Basically, if it tastes real bad, or if it's too strong,
yeah,
add a little water.
Yeah.
Just dilute it a little.
Just don't drink as much.
Do you just let the chlorine gas, do you put it outside so the chlorine gas just dissipates outside?
Yeah, well, you're outside and the container will dissipate it. But if I do one to myself, put it in a liter of water, I just put the lid on, put it in the fridge, and the gas, it's very water soluble, so. Yeah, great stuff. No, I mean, David had a horrible boil at one time that was just going to kill him. And, well, you can tell
a story. Boil that can kill you? I didn't know.
I can tell more than one story, actually.
Thank you.
I had a staph infection that I cured with it.
Wow.
And I had a staph infection earlier and went to antibiotic route, and that seemed to help, but it took a long time and messed me up in other ways.
Yes.
The chlorine dioxide just shuts them off, I swear.
It did what?
Almost shuts these infections right off. It's just like one day does what, you know, 3 weeks of antibiotics do. That's been my experience. I had an abscess and swelling in my gums, and one day of switching with chlorine dioxide totally eliminated it.
Does that help with things like Lyme?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it will.
So I could do that instead of antibiotics for Lyme?
Yes.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Ivermectin too. Yeah. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming.
That's really interesting.
So,
but
well,
where do you get it?
My lovely wife could tell you. I'm not sure. Bill could tell you.
Yeah.
We have a whole bunch of stuff.
Will you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ivermectin. Robert Minotti this week said ivermectin was bad. It's the first time I've heard that.
No, Yaden.
Yaden, Mike Yaden, excuse me. I'm not so sure I understand why he said that. That's the first time I've heard anything bad about ivermectin.
But except I've got that a, is a pharmaceutical.
Well,
so
yeah.
It's a synthetic.
Yeah, well, you got to know your source, too.
I think I like horse paste. I'm going to start using
it's
one eraser size dose twice a day.
That's about right.
It works.
Yeah.
Ben has
and does it matter what?
What do you think about Ben?
So I again, it's all of these things work. And I think, you know, the mechanisms of action have got to be similar and the crossover, but I think that there's some things that Ben does and ivermectin doesn't. And vice versa, so it's
there's a study right now, an observational study, three in the United States, on ivermectin and fenbendazole together. Do you want to tell them?
In the treatment of breast cancer. So these are triple
any
negative.
Any cancer.
The first one was breast cancer. I didn't know about the any cancer one. Is that right?
No. So. Because these drugs are already approved, they don't cost anything. You don't do a trial with them, and of course, as you know, the government says we can't use these, right? So they found that there were some links to anti-cancer, anti-tumor activity with these two drugs. So they put together an observational study with, there's three different places.
Oh, that's
Kathleen Ruddy's.
That's Ruddy's.
Yeah.
No, I was talking about that the first institutional review board approved study is happening in California right now. Triple negative breast cancer.
Right.
Standard chemotherapy versus standard chemotherapy plus ivermectin. They're not going to get rid of the chemotherapy. But to try to, and the initial experience with Ruddy has suggested that ivermectin and fenben kill cancer cells. I don't know the mechanism of action. Again, I think it's anything that can take the microbiome from hypoxic acid to oxic alkaline. I read today that ivermectin not only kills bad things, it actually feeds bifidus.
What's that?
No.
That's a good bacteria that resides in your gut biome. Yeah.
Well, anyway, they were having really good results with these three observational studies for cancer. When you had talked to Kathleen Ruddy, it was back in like August. And she had enrolled 400 patients so far, all different kinds of cancers, and having really amazing results with it.
Now, are these from the turbo cancers that people are getting from the shots? Or is this just
well, I think it was enrolling anybody, but they're, just because they are younger, there's not, it's the same, I think, the pathophysiology is unclear to me about how cancer originates, but I think that the same thing, you take the immune system down, and opportunistic things happen. It may be infections, it may be cancers, it just, opportunistic things happen because the immune system is no longer capable.
But if you're jabbed and you have an mRNA component, then in my view, you have to disable the mRNA component and then allow whatever to go and go in.
Right.
And like that one woman who talked about doing EDTA plus vitamin C.
Correct.
To destroy, and you say you don't like EDTA, but and some people say I don't like chemical vitamins, but I'm kind of like, if I am in a triage situation, I'll take the synthetic vitamin over nothing at all. That's
correct.
What I have to get me to
live.
I was reading where nicotine is.
Good.
It's destroying some of the nanobot crap that's in the nanotechnology.
Correct. So nicotine is not addictive. You all know that.
That's right.
So nicotine is not addictive. The cigarette industry hired scientists to find chemicals that were addicting, and they put them in the cigarettes, and that is how they kept people smoking. When cigarettes finally came down and the curtain was pulled back, Big Ag took all those scientists into Big Ag. So Big Food has the same additives in the food, which is why food is so addicting.
The processed food.
But the point, though, is nicotine itself is not addictive.
So you're saying everything that made the cigarettes so addictive, they've got that in processed food.
Correct. That is exactly right. And I don't know that we'll hear all of those things in the coming 4 years, but we'll hear some of them.
Dr. Judy Mikovits,
yes,
believes that she and her colleagues, who are biochemists, have the silver bullet for the coming pandemic, and that's ivermectin and paramycin. That there's some form of a synergistic association between those two that destroys the biochemistry of the new biological, biochemical attack that's coming. And she says it's 100% because we've been able to get some advanced formulations of the coming bioweapon, which will be called four different viruses, but it's not viruses, it's biochemicals. But she believes they've already got the cure.
But that's usually what they do. I was in the pharmaceutical industry. The first thing you do is find the cure.
Yeah.
Then they cause the problem.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they do.
Yeah, that way they have the cure. That's right.
But they have the cure because if one of their own gets whatever they want to save.
Yeah. Of all things. But it's something about the biochemistry of ivermectin. Plus the biochemistry of paramycin, which causes a catalyst to destroy.
So I've never heard of paramycin. Is that one of the mycins, like erythromycin, sumycin, acomycin?
Yeah. Yeah, all of